the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler, and I don't know if you've noticed it or not at the store when you go shopping, but things in boxes and bags that you buy, especially chips if you like to get into junk food, there seems to be getting less of them. But it's very hard to detect that because it looks like the same old bag, but it isn't. As a matter of fact, chocolate bars are getting smaller. And I finally went over and talked to the chip dude at the supermarket. He said, oh yeah, we just went through another reset. We have a third of an ounce less in each bag. And believe it or not, this is a way that they're dealing with increased cost due to inflation. I never quite thought it would manifest like that, but you're actually getting less and less without them really increasing the price that much more, and probably most people won't notice. We have covered a number of subjects in the last couple of programs, subjects that all retirees will face. We talked recently about the four horsemen of the retirement apocalypse: longevity. Who would ever think longevity might be a curse or something like that? Number two, medical costs, because you're all going to face them, and the probabilities of them going up in retirement increases with age. Number three, financial repression. And then number four, inflation. Inflation is not going to go away, given the posture and status of our Federal Reserve Bank right now, and they've been on an inflationary bent since 1913. And so we're going to see that continue to its end. But this week, we would like to focus on how many of these factors, these four factors, actually interrelate, because all of life, as the Hindu guru would tell you, all of life is interconnected. And all of your retirement is interconnected too. So you better plan, stupid.
Okay. Anyway, you know, I was just thinking, John, you were talking about, you know, the smaller packages.
Yeah.
And a lot of times during the week, I will have these kind of what they call energy bars or protein bars. And I was noticing the last time I got a box, the amount of calories in the bar had gone down. I'm thinking, oh, maybe they're using less of some substance. Until I opened up the box, they're smaller.
And that's how they're doing it. You know, they're not raising the prices as much. They're just giving you less. And so the public generally, unless you're paying attention, doesn't notice that. But it's a direct effect of inflation.
Well, you can see this. You can see this in a package of cheese. I saw it in my energy bars. You see it in chips. You see it in all kinds of things where the packages are, gosh, I remember that. That used to look bigger. And so it's one way of dealing with inflation. But seriously, what we want to do today is, John had mentioned in my article, The Four Horsemen, in a show we did a couple of weeks ago, there's four issues that you deal with: longevity, medical costs, financial repression, and inflation. What I want to do today is get you to think seriously about three of these factors, how they are all linked to each other. Because the tie-in here is really longevity. And as John, you were just mentioning there, who would have thought living to be an older age, let's say in their 90s, late 80s, 90s, or even 100 today. Just on the news last night, one of the anchors wished some woman, I think in Texas, she was 110 years old. And so longevity creates two other issues that you're going to deal with in retirement, and they're going to sneak up on you. And that's why we really call these the silent killer. The longer that you live, the greater out-of-pocket medical expenses you're going to face in your retirement. The longer that you live, the more you're going to be subject to the problems of inflation. So longevity, as a result of longevity, your medical costs are going to go up, and also your expenses are also going to go up and be subject to inflation. All three of these are related. And who would have thought, John, and this is something that when we began looking into this a little over a decade ago, because we began to see it with a lot of my clients who were statistically shouldn't be living, but they were. They're living into their 80s. I have a number of clients who are in their 90s. Don't have a centenarian yet, but I do have quite a few clients in their 90s. And healthy people are the ones that impact the most. So, you know, we do a lot of programs here on the show about staying healthy, whether it's mental activity, avoiding things like dementia, Alzheimer's, lowering your cholesterol, getting your weight down, diabetes, all these kind of things that we cover on here on this program, due to knowledge and medical science, are done in a way to help keep us healthy. And who doesn't want to live a healthy retirement lifestyle? But because of being more healthy, your longevity goes up, and longevity has been increasing by 2 years every decade. As a result of that longevity, you're going to face two major things that are going to impact your retirement. One is going to be more medical expenses, and obviously the longer you live, the greater the impact inflation is going to have on your retirement.
You know, this is in a sort of perverted way. What you're telling me is that this is good news. In other words, if you're in poor health or, you know, suffering from some kind of a long-term disease, well, the odds of you suffering from longevity and resulting medical costs and financial repression, inflation, you don't have to worry about it. You know, yeah, it's sort of like, okay, that's a blessing or a curse. I haven't figured out which one.
Yeah, and I think all of us listening to this program, including myself and you and I doing this program, we would all rather have the problems that we face with longevity, because inflation, as we call the silent killer, is something that creeps up over time. And the medical costs are things that you are going to face over your retirement, but it's not a lump sum. It's not like the day you retire, you get handed a medical bill for $260,000, which is what you'll end up spending at age 65 over your lifetime in retirement. Those costs are spaced out, and they come probably closer to the last phase of your retirement, because we're going to break out retirement in three phases here. But a healthy person is subject to higher medical cost and inflation cost.
Yeah, and this is something that a lot of people don't factor in. You know, when does life begin? You know, when the dog dies and the kids go to college, something like that, then you're free to do what you need. So people thinking, you know, I'm going to retire, I'm going to take time off, and they're not thinking of things necessarily 20 years down the road. Just like a lot of millennials, young people starting out, they're not thinking of their retirement. And believe me, it comes up on you a lot faster than you would believe. You know, my youngest son just got his PhD, and I was applying to him now that he's age 30. And I said, well, according to Jim Poplava, you can feel relieved. He didn't say who, you know, he knows who you are. I said, by the time you're 50, you need to have this much in your retirement portfolio. That means you have to set aside X number of dollars by that time. So I'm already talking to him about that, you know, because if you don't, you're behind the curve.
Yeah. One of the reasons we're calling this silent killer is, if you take a look at historically, since World War II, inflation has averaged 3.5% a year. Here's the problem. If you're retired, you're subject to higher inflation costs, and mainly coming from your health care. Healthcare inflation has been running at 6 to 7% a year for retirees. And the best example I can give you is every single year, based on a survey of all the costs that go into healthcare, which includes your Medicare premiums, your Medicare insurance, your deductibles, out-of-pocket expenses, things like vision, dental care, those kind of things, they measure that. In 2015, it was close to $240,000 a year. In 2016, that figure has now risen to $260,000. It is up by over 6%. Now, here's the way you have to think about this if you're retired. Think of your retirement in three phases. Phase one is the go-go years. Let's say you retire, and let's just take the age 65. For most people, it's 66 today because of Social Security benefits. So you retire at age 66. The first 30-year retirement, we call the go-go years, you're still healthy. You're going to make up for all the lost time during work. You're going to take the long trips. You're going to go to Europe. You're going to do the things you weren't able to do when you were working or raising your kids. So the first phase of retirement, you're probably going to be subject to a few more expenses. And a lot of that is going to come from hobbies, whether it's golf, going around the country in a motorhome, or traveling somewhere. Your second phase is what we call the go-slow years. Now, let's just make this easier to understand. Let's take 21 years in retirement. So the first 7 years are the go-go years. Those are the years you're really punching it. You're going places. You're spending money in ways you didn't think, mainly on entertainment, going out to restaurants, travel. The second phase, the next 7 years, are what we call the go-slow phase. You're probably not doing as much travel. Instead of 3 trips or 2 trips, maybe take 1 trip a year. Your spending tends to decrease during the second phase. Your final phase is what we call the no-go years. That is when you are going to be subject towards the latter part of your life to increased medical expenses. That's when, you know, picture 15 years of inflation rates on your cost of living, whether it's food, whether it's insurance cost, or even some of your prescriptions, but you're more likely to start running into higher medical costs. This is when they really come to bite you in that third phase of your retirement. And that's what we call the sick period, or a period of your life where you're less mobile and subject to higher medical expenses. And God forbid, one of you as a married couple could end up in long-term care, or if you're a single individual, could end up in long-term care. What do you do? So you have expenses that hit you in the early years, and it's kind of like a sandwich. They hit you in the early years and the late years. You know, early years, travel, hobbies, and entertainment. Later years, phase three, what we call the no-go years, that is medical and long-term care.
And again, as I was pointing out, this seems to be an ironic type of thing. Everybody wants to live longer. You want to be healthier. But with that, you have longevity risk, because as you live longer, you incur more medical expenses over time, increasingly so. And then there is inflation risk, and inflation over a short time versus inflation over a longer time is quite different.
Yeah. And one of the things that we see in a lot of retirement plans is they don't fully address the medical issue, the inflation issue, or what I call sequence risk. We'll talk more about that in a minute. And that is being subject to a bear market at the beginning of your retirement. And I'll just say briefly here, imagine that you retired in the year 2000. What did you see to all those wonderful high-tech investments and stock market investments? If you were in tech stocks, you lost 70% in the next 2 years. If you were just in S&P stocks, you lost 45%. Or think worse, you retired in the year 2008 in the Great Recession. So the problem with retirement is everybody focuses on your number. If you're working with an advisor, and let's say you tell your advisor, look, you know, between Social Security, what I'm going to get in pension, when I retire, I'm going to need $5,000 a month to live on, off my investments. And so your number becomes, what is that number that's going to produce $5,000 a month income when you retire? And let's say that you want a 4% withdrawal rate. You don't want to go through principal. Today, that's roughly going to be about $1.2 million. So let's say you're successful as a result of savings, as a result of planning. You get to that $1.2 million number and you think, okay, I've got it made. I've got Social Security. That goes up each year. I need $5,000 a month. I've got that. That's coming in. Everything looks great. Well, the problem is that inflation portfolio or that number doesn't necessarily mean you are inflation protected. I'm going to illustrate this in two ways. If you were living on $5,000 a month in 10 years, with the 3.5% inflation rate, the purchasing power of that $5,000 is only going to be $3,500 10 years from now. So imagine if you're on a fixed income and you don't have anything going up, what are you going to see? Gradually, over a period of time, you're going to be able to afford less and do less of the things that you're doing now. In 20 years, your purchasing power, that $5,000 will only buy $2,500 worth of goods and services. In 25 years, it's only going to buy $2,100 worth of goods and services. So, and this is what hits a lot of retirees. It's inflation eroding the purchasing power, because a lot of retirees are in fixed income, either in a pension, or they have a good bulk of their assets in bonds, or maybe they have a pension payout from their company that's a fixed dollar amount. It's great the year you retire. It's not so great 10 years, 15 years, or 20 years into retirement. Another way of looking at it, at the end of 25 years, if you were to maintain the same purchasing power of $5,000 today, you would need about $12,000 a month. So instead of $5,000, you're going to need $12,000.
And that is one of the reasons we go into a lot of statistics, because there was a survey of retirees that was done recently who were 65 or older who died between the years 2010 and 2012. 1 in 5 died with only their home as their only asset. 1 in 6 died broke, and 1 in 10 died with debt. So that's really indicative of where we are.
Yeah, and this is why you have to begin to incorporate and relate the factor of longevity to increasing medical costs to increasing inflation cost. Now, the good news is if you plan for it and you incorporate in your plan, this is something that you can handle, because the $260,000 of average out-of-pocket medical expenses, that isn't a lump sum figure. That's not a number that you're going to face the year you retire. That's over your lifetime. But here's the bad news. Depending on your income, you could actually, instead of $260,000, you could face $560,000. The difference being is what your income is, because Medicare charges you a different premium based on your income. If you are below $85,000, you pay $109 a month for Medicare. However, if you're in the upper income categories, your premiums can go up over 290%. This year, in 2017, the top premium for Medicare per month is $428.60. So if you are an upper income individual, your Medicare cost and your out-of-pocket medical expenses are going to be much greater. They can actually double, more than double, from $260,000. And those figures are going up every year. For example, if you're part of those 30%ers receiving Medicare that have an income over $85,000 a year, and that's combined income, whether it's from investments, pension, Social Security, your premiums went up 22% for Medicare this year. And there's a clause in the way our Medicare laws work, and this was changed under George W. Bush when they brought in Medicare Part D drug prescription. They changed Medicare pricing to a tiered system. So you actually pay more the more income that you make, versus at one time there was only basically one rate that you had to pay for Medicare. Now there's 5 different tiers that you pay for Medicare, depending on income $85,000 all the way up to income over $214,000. And if your income is over $214,000 and going up, you could pay that $428. So these expenses are going up. And the reason they did that, there's a hold harmless clause in Medicare, which basically says they can't increase your Medicare premiums more than the increase in your Social Security benefits. However, that only applies to 70% of most people on Medicare, those individuals that fall underneath that $85,000 of income. Once your income exceeds that, then the bulk of increasing Medicare costs are borne by those making more income. So it's a different kind of expense. And once again, this is not only a factor of your income, but also a factor of your longevity, because obviously if you're in the upper tiered group, you're going to be facing over $500,000 of out-of-pocket expenses during your retirement instead of the average couple of $260,000. The other thing that we need to talk about here is another myth when it comes to retirement planning, and this is called sequence risk. And sequence risk deals with the issue that you don't face a bear market at the beginning of your retirement. I mean, look at it this way. Let's say you had $1 million in January of the year 2000, and that was your number. That was the number that produced your $5,000 a month income. What happened in the next 2 years. If you were in tech stocks, as a lot of people were, the NASDAQ lost 70% of its value. The S&P lost over 40% of its value. Fast forward, you have $1 million. It's January 2008. In the next 2 years, the stock market lost 45% of its value. You do not want to go into a bear market at the beginning of your retirement because your nest egg could be devastated. It's one of the things that's really hurting boomers today as they've gone through two bear markets in less than a decade. And the thing that we covered on the weekend show, and we talked about it, is this is the second most expensive stock market in the history of the market over the last century. And all of a sudden now, people are abandoning their bond positions and money's flowing into stock funds and flowing into the stock market, chasing the stock market more towards the end of a bull market than the beginning of a bull market, which means you're having to pay more money. So what you want to do, contrary to popular opinion, is you want to own more safe investments like bonds, CDs, treasuries, whatever it is, at the beginning of your retirement, because you cannot afford to go through a bear market and have your portfolio devastated. Towards the end of your life, you should have a larger component of your portfolio that is in stocks. Those are your inflation hedges. Those are the things that you're going to be dependent on to help get you through 25 years of retirement.
Given here that these are all related, the real core that triggers the others, you have longevity costs. I mean, you live longer, which results in higher medical costs and higher inflationary costs. How are you going to anticipate those, especially when inflation, well, even medical costs, which relates to that too, are sort of out of your direct control?
Well, I mean, there's two things that you should do from a planning perspective. You're working with an advisor, or if you're doing this yourself, you should take a health questionnaire. This is something that we do in the financial planning process. The questionnaire was put together by insurance companies because these are the guys that are insuring people medically. These are the people that insure people for life insurance. And so they have a huge database, and they know that if you have certain characteristics, you're more likely to live longer or less likely to live longer. So you want to do a health questionnaire. You also want to look at your own family history, or that of your spouse, that of your parents. You know, if your parents lived well into their 80s, or they're alive today in their 90s, you know, that's a pretty good indication that you're more likely to be subject to longevity risk. And what you're really trying to do here is narrow the possibilities. Now, if you have a debilitating disease, I don't need to tell you. I mean, what does your doctor tell you? You know, if you have serious heart disease or diabetes, it's unlikely that your lifespan will be into the 90s or you'll be a centenarian. So you're narrowing the possibilities. So if you are subject to longevity risk, then what you want to do is include medical expenses in your budget. So if you're spending $60,000 a year, you're a married couple, you have average health, you want to add about $13,000 to that budget, because that's what you're going to need to set aside, put aside, so you have money or assets to cover those increasing expenses that are going to mount every single year in your retirement. Your medical costs are going to go up. Your expenses for living are going to go up. And then what you want to do is inflation-proof your budget and align your savings and your investment portfolio so that they are designed to meet goals. So many times, and we're seeing this right now as a great example of this, where people have been conservative on the risk curve in moderate risk, all of a sudden with this Trump rally, and they're seeing the stock market going up towards the latter part of bull market, now they're jumping on board. And we're seeing this with fund flows into equity ETFs. We're seeing it into fund flows into stock mutual funds, and we're seeing outflows of bonds. In other words, people are changing their portfolio mix because it's like we've gone from fear, now we're going to greed. And you do not want to do that. You want to have a plan that's designed to meet your long-term retirement goals, and you want to stick to that plan. You don't move out of that plan just because the market changes in the short term.
So three things here, and this is just a reiteration of what we've been talking about. Longevity, assuming that your health is good and you take care of your health. But nevertheless, the older you get, you have higher medical costs. Things have to be done. And that leads to higher inflation. So all of these things you need to prepare for. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Brian MacArthur is our guest, a specialist in long-term care, as we discuss the cost, the probabilities that you're going to need it, and then ways to mitigate this expense ahead of time. And right now it's time for our real-life case study illustrating what we've been discussing here on the program today. As with all things, it's called a real-life case study because it involves real people. We simply change their names to protect their privacy.
This week, we have Dr. Bob and Nancy Adams. Bob is 71. Nancy is 73. Both are retired now. Life expectancy was age 90 and 92. Both are healthy with a family history of longevity. Their risk tolerance was conservative, and the investment objective was income and preservation of capital. They're retired now, but this was a case that we worked on many years ago. Bob was a doctor that originally wanted to retire at age 65, but he had a taste for the finer things in life because basically as a doctor, his income was pretty good. So he wanted to enjoy the fruits of his hard work and didn't want to have to change his lifestyle throughout retirement. His wife, Nancy, also retired now, she is a retired office manager, and she kind of relies on Bob to make the financial decisions. Basically, Nancy's main concerns were she wanted to know that things were taken care of and that they can maintain the same standard of living, especially since longevity ran on both sides and especially on Nancy's side. And so the things that were really important to them, number one is they wanted to maintain lifestyle. They wanted to stay in their present home, which they love. It was a nice custom home. They wanted to stay there. When they designed it, they also made modifications, being a doctor, so that they could stay and age in the home as they got older. And they were concerned that they wouldn't outlive their assets with longevity running on both sides of the family. Didn't want to move from the house, didn't want to downsize, didn't want to do any of those things. And also, towards the end of their life, they would also like to leave something for their children and their grandchildren. Now, as we took a look at their retirement budget, $75,000 on essentials, $70,000 on discretionary, which included a lot of money spent on travel, golf, recreation, boating. I could relate to that. So there were a lot of things that they were spending money on. Total budget of $145,000. Their Social Security would have been $45,000, leaving a shortfall of $100,000. Now, let's take a look at their assets. Their home was valued about $670,000. Their investments were about $500,000 in their trust account. Bob's IRAs, there were two of them, a little over $1.1 million. Nancy's IRA was about $40,000. So investment assets were about $1.7 million. Total assets about $2.4 million. They owed about $60,000 remaining on the mortgage, net worth about $2.3 million. And basically, what we were dealing with, the challenges were they wanted to retire at age 65 when they came, but they didn't have sufficient assets to support their lifestyle. If they were willing to downsize their home, cut back on their budget, I said, you know, we basically said you could retire, but not the way you're living now. If you want to maintain that living standard in retirement, I'm sorry, but the numbers just aren't going to work. So longevity was also a concern since both had great family history and neither of them had any health issues whatsoever. They wanted to maintain this high standard of living. They didn't want to reduce expenses. And that was the real key here. Also, the other thing we discovered is their estate plan hadn't been updated in 15 years, despite the numerous tax law changes and family changes. So there were many bucket item lists they wanted to achieve, like nice cars. They wanted to continue with their vacation, do those kind of things. What we suggested is we put close to $800,000 in a balanced account between fixed income and dividend players. And that is basically what we did with the bulk of the assets. The smaller asset, since Nancy was more likely to outlive her husband, we put that in a dividend account. And so grand total of investment income was $133,000 less budget of 145 they had a surplus. But here's what we had to do to make that work. Instead of retiring at age 65, Bob would go into semi-retirement, still do some medical practice as a consultant, and the retirement date we set to age 71. That was number one. Number two, we delayed taking Social Security until age 70. So Social Security income would go up 32%, because if you defer from age 66 to age 70, your Social Security benefits are going to go up 8% a year. And folks, I don't know any investment that will guarantee you 8% as Social Security does if you delay taking it at an earlier age. So two things we did. He worked part-time to maintain the lifestyle. And number two, delay taking Social Security until age 70. That allowed them to maintain their lifestyle, but we also said that we would pay for things out of cash, for a new car or vacation. If the cash was there coming in, and that's why in their budget we included savings for items like, you want a new Mercedes and you want to pay cash for it, you got to put so much money aside each year to pay for that. We also paid off the remaining mortgage, which they were able to do as a result of Bob continuing to work to age 70. And then we also updated their estate plan, including stretch provisions for the IRA, which was the bulk of the assets besides the home, so that they wouldn't be subject to huge income taxes when both spouses passed on. But here was a case, John, based on longevity. We had to alter the retirement plan by 5 years in order to maintain the same lifestyle. So, you know, we told them, you could retire at age 65, but you're going to have to downsize. You're going to have to make a dramatic cut in the way you spend money, in the way you live. Bob chose instead, because he was healthy, longevity running the family, you know what, I can work part-time in the practice that he was involved in and bring in some extra income, which would allow him to work and to age 70, delaying Social Security benefits, also building up a much, much larger retirement portfolio as a result of delaying part of those retirement benefits.
You know, and in this case too, by the way, Jim, you know, obviously he had the assets to do what he wanted to do, but there had to be some shifts in the lifestyle. And so with doing some shuffling of things around and some planning, he was able to achieve the goals that he wanted to do. So it does work.
Yeah, it does work. And this is what we're seeing with a lot of retirement plans today. We're having to make those kind of adjustments. It's that simple. I mean, it's a matter of math. You know, you either downsize, move to a cheaper location, and cut back on your goals and objectives in terms of lifestyle, or if you want to maintain that lifestyle. And John, this is an increasing trend that we're seeing with boomers. Over 40% of men over age 65 are still working in some form or another. And just like Dr. Bob did, he decided, you know what, I'm healthy. I like what I'm doing. I'll just work part-time. And that was the best of both worlds, because he could bring in enough income where he could postpone and maintain his lifestyle, take the trips he wanted, take the things sailing and do the things that he would like to do. And he was able to afford it. And it was just simply a matter of postponing retirement by 5 years.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Anything we're looking forward to in the weeks to come here on Lifetime Income?
Let me see. We're probably going to get into a couple of health issues coming up. I want to cover the topic of sugar on health. And it's amazing, this stuff. And, you know, one of the reasons that we're living longer today is not only just the advances in medicine, but we're learning healthier things to do. In other words, certain things about our lifestyle that help contribute to longevity. But once again, as we've been talking in this program, the longer you live, well, guess what? Higher medical expenses, the more impact of inflation. So we're going to get into a couple of health issues here. We're also going to be doing a special show on a special kind of trust for those of you who are fortunate. We're going to cover that in detail. So a lot of good things on taxes that we'll be covering here, both from income tax planning and estate planning in the weeks and months ahead. All of that here on Lifetime Income. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.